Hey, buddy, I'm not paying you to hear your thoughts on life.
Well, I have a microphone, and you don't.
So you will listen to every damn word I have to say!
Allow myself to introduce myself.
Welcome to Season 3 of the Raise Your Game Show, a podcast that unpacks and dissects the strategies and principles of high performance in sports and business. I'm your host, Alan Stein Jr. In this season, I lean on several of the most innovative and impactful leaders I know to garner their wisdom on how to effectively lead during times of adversity, how to remain poised during a crisis, and how to look for and capitalize on new opportunities. While these Zoom recordings took place during the height of the coronavirus pandemic, the tips, strategies, and principles shared are timeless and can be applied to any future challenge. They also have very high utility. The wisdom dropped can and should be applied to any line of work, in any industry, in any organization. For additional resources on improving performance, leadership, and culture, please check out allensteinjr.com/free. Follow me at Alan Stein Jr. on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, and LinkedIn, and opt in to receive my full timeout, 30-second timeout, and overtime monthly emails. Today, I huddle up with James Franklin, head football coach at Penn State University. Coach, as a major Division I college football coach, you're used to dealing with adversity a lot. You know, whether it's a missed fourth down conversion or a player getting injured and having to miss games. What has been your mindset and approach to this massive adversity of COVID-19?
Well, I think it's like anything else. I think the first thing you do is you identify, you know, the challenge or the adversity or whatever it is, and then you come up with a plan, and then you try to work the plan. And for us, you know, I'll be honest with you, we like to be prepared for pretty much anything that may come. And I'm embarrassed to say it, but we weren't prepared for this. And, you know, I think we've come up with a good plan. And I think for the first week, it was pretty challenging. But I think after that, I think we've gotten in a pretty good routine. And what we try to do with, you know, with football and with life, because I think what we're all really doing is we're using the game of football or basketball in your background to teach life habits, you know, what we call championship habits. You know, there's so many parallels, things that lead to success on the court or on the field. I'm a huge believer will lead to success later in life. So, you know, we tried to kind of look at that this way, and I think there'll be positives that come out of this. You know, if you're approaching it the right way, there's a silver lining. And as a individual or as an organization, you should learn something about yourself through this process. So, you know, one of the things right away that jumps out to me is technology. You know, there's probably a bunch of guys on the staff, including myself, that probably had not embraced technology the way we should. And this has taught us a lesson that there's a lot of things that we could be taking advantage of and weren't, that I think we will now moving forward.
I love that. I love that you look for the silver linings. You know, when I made my visit to campus and had a chance to sit in on some of the stuff that you all did, I remember vividly how important your core values are to you and to the program, and that every room and every building that I went into, those were prominently displayed. Can you talk a little bit about how those core values are serving you and your staff and your players now during this time?
Well, your quote was up in our building too, though.
Yes, of course. Well, if I remember correctly, it was mine and Gandhi's next to each other. I just want to make sure everyone knows that my quote and Gandhi's quotes are in the same building. So, yes.
Yeah, as much as I love you, you're not on that level yet.
Not quite.
You know, I'm a big believer that it is critical that you understand what your overall philosophy is, that you understand what your core values are, and probably even before that, that you know what your why is. I think everybody's got to know what their why is. It's something that can help, you know, drive you in the morning, wake up and feel good about going and attacking whatever the challenge may be for that day. It also helps in challenging times as well. Well, why am I doing this? Well, whether it's your family or your children or your wife or your love for the game or your competitive, you know, aspect or whatever it is, whatever drives you, I think that's really important. And I think all those things kind of are very similar. You know, your core values, I think, grounds you. Your overall philosophy grounds you. Your why grounds you. A lot of times it's, you know, people describe it as a true north. You know, it always kind of keeps you headed in the right direction. And for us, you know, our core values came from me just over a lifetime studying successful individuals, studying successful business organizations and teams. And what were the common denominators? You know, and for me, it came down to our four core values, which was attitude. You know, you're having a positive attitude, having a positive outlook on life, being able to draw people to you with an infectious energy rather than the opposite. You know, so that was number one, positive attitude. Number two was great work ethic. I know there's a very small percentage of people that they, in high school, they were the best. They show up in college, they're the best, and they go to the NFL and they're still talented, you know, but you know, the other 99.999%, you better work, you know. And, you know, for me, that work ethic kind of falls back on preparation. You know, if you want to be successful, you better out prepare people. And I also think there's so much confidence that comes with that and peace that comes from that. And what I mean by that is if you've done everything you possibly can to prepare, and you've worked your tail off to be the best version of yourself, you can put your head on the pillow at night and feel very comfortable. So Friday nights, you know, I sleep really well. I don't sleep great Sunday through Thursday, you know, because I'm thinking about all the things that we got to get done. But Friday night, I put my head on the pillow and I feel pretty good because I know we've done everything we possibly can to be prepared to go out and play well. And that's the same thing I tell our guys in the classroom. You know, I'm not a big believer in these titles like test anxiety. You know, test anxiety is you didn't study hard enough. You didn't prepare hard. But our guys will say, well, coach, sometimes I got to study 6 hours to get the A, and this girl in my class, she only has to study an hour to get an A. Well, who cares? At the end of the day, you got the A. You know, so that work ethic is just such a key ingredient. So positive attitude, great work ethic. The third core value is compete. You know, compete in everything you do. Whether it's in the classroom, whether it's in the weight room, whether it's in the gym, whether it's on the practice field, you better learn how to compete and be able to compete at a very, very high level. You know, and I'm a big believer. That's what this country was founded on, being the most competitive society in the world. And, you know, if you want these special things, then you better be willing to compete at a level that very few people will understand. And then the last core value is sacrifice. Are you willing to sacrifice things that the common man isn't willing to sacrifice? Little things now for big things later in life. And I think if you ask everybody, do you want to be successful? Everybody says yes, but very few people are willing to make the right choices moment after moment. Because that's what it's really about. A lot of people think it's like this big moment that happens and you said it, you know, you came to the fork and you had to make the choice. I actually think it's just a combination of small choices day after day, moment after moment. And the more right choices that are usually the hard choice and usually the difficult choice, but the more willing you're able to make those right choices moment after moment, day after moment, all those things add up and it's going to lead to success.
Oh man, so much gold right there. And I love one, how much you all reinforce those four core values. I mean, like I said, they're painted everywhere, but I heard them constantly discussed and emphasized. I also love how they have such high utility. As you just said, those serve you well in the weight room. They serve you well in the film room, on the practice field, but they also serve you in the classroom or in the boardroom. So that's remarkable. You had mentioned something about you are.
Go ahead. Please. Let me say something out real quick. You know, I got to give Michael Hazel, you know, credit for that, because one of the things he's done a really good job with me is, you know, we talk about branding and being consistent with our message. And I've seen some organizations, I've seen some coaches, and there's so many good things out there. You know, I think when you're young, you think there's only one way to do something. And you get older, you realize there's a lot of ways to be successful. You know, but what me and Michael spend a lot of time talking about is I'm constantly reading or finding or seeing something I think is really good. Well, I've seen other coaches and other organizations, you walk around their building or you go into their environment or you listen to them do a presentation and they have 75 different quotes and 75 different messages, and they may all be good, but it waters down. It gets watered down. And you know, what's important? What's critically important? What are their core values? What is this program being run or driven by? And I just think you have to be careful. There's a bunch of good stuff out there, yeah. But you can't just have every message and every quote and every philosophy out there. You better have a few that you feel strongly about.
Yeah, it's that old saying, if you have, more than three priorities, then you don't have any. And yeah, you can't really have a list of 75 core values or they get diluted. I love that. Well, what you had mentioned before you started talking about your core values was how you're a lifelong learner and how important learning is. And I know when I look at your resume, you've been rather nomadic as a coach, and you've coached at a variety of different levels and programs and have had quite a journey before you took over at Penn State. How do you think that's benefited you as a leader and as a coach to have been in so many different environments at different levels?
Well, I'm really proud of the fact, that I'm a small school guy. I went to a Division II school in Pennsylvania, and it made it challenging early on because I didn't have the same network of people to lean on, whereas if I would have gone to Penn State, I just didn't have those people that could pick up the phone and make the call. And that's no disrespect, because I worked with great people.
Yeah.
But I really had to kind of work my way up the ladder. So I lived in 9 different states or countries in my first 9 years.
Wow.
And, you could make both arguments. I think the one argument is you coach at a big time school, you understand what it's like at that level. Because a lot of times people say, well, football is football or basketball. Well, that's not necessarily true. The reality is Division II is very different than 1AA, which is very different than 1A, which is very different than the NFL. They're different. They're different monsters. They really are. So for me, you can make both arguments. Coaching major college football and understanding how competitive it is year round in recruiting, bowl games, the amount of attention that you get. Vanderbilt was a very different job than Penn State. On the other end of the spectrum, I think there's tremendous value working at a small business or working at a small team or small organization where you have to wear so many more hats because you don't have the resources. So you get more hands-on experience in those types of jobs too. So I think you can make arguments both ways. And I think at the end of the day, probably having a balance of both, I think is probably really important. So for me, I've just tried to, I think we all steal and copycat to a degree. What I've tried to do throughout my entire career, whether that was at East Stroudsburg with Denny Dowds, my head coach, who was the head coach there for like 50 years, or whether it was, being at University of Maryland with Ralph Regan or Mike Price at Washington State or Mike Sherman with the Green Bay Packers, all these places, I tried to steal things. I tried to say, that was really good. What the Green Bay Packers did here as an organization, that's first class. I'm going to write that down. I'm going to use that one day. Or what Ralph Regan did when it came to scheme and X's and O's and holding people accountable. That was something. So I tried to steal something from every place I worked. But one of the things that I think is important is you can only take things from other people and other organizations that align with your personality and philosophy, because it may be a good idea, but it doesn't fit your style. And I think if you're not careful, the worst thing you want to do is come off as not being authentic. You have to be true to who you are. So I think that's really important. And then I think conversely, the other thing that's really important is just as valuable, maybe more, is not what that coach or that CEO did wrong, but what I would do differently. Mm-hmm. So not only do they do these things really well, but based on my personality and my leadership style, I probably would do this differently. And learning those things is just as valuable as the things you would do.
Oh, I love that. So, I mean, it sounds like in each of those different stops, you took a couple of puzzle pieces that aligned with who you were authentically. And now this final mosaic, not final as in being done, but the mosaic that's currently Coach Franklin and Penn State football is made up of puzzle pieces from all the different stops that you've had. I love that. You know, there were two things that I noticed immediately, having spent some time around you. The first was how much you value relationships, of course, with your staff, but the relationships you've created with your players. And the other was during one of the meetings I sat in on, one, it was meticulously organized, but that you gave everyone a voice. Everyone went around the room and had an opportunity to share and give some input. So let's handle those in reverse order. Why is that important to you during a meeting that everybody gets a chance to share or have some input?
Well, I think ultimately when you're a CEO of an organization, whether it's the head coach or whether it's a GM or whether it's a president, whatever it may be, ultimately your job is to make the best decisions for the organization. And the only way you can make great decisions is by having all or most of the information. So for me to make a great decision, I need to hear what the coaches think. I need to hear what the staff thinks. I need to hear what the players think. I need to blend those with my experiences and my opinion. And then ultimately, I have to take all that information and make the best decision. And to avoid blind spots or to avoid groupthink or whatever it may be, if I'm not including the players and hear their perspective, then I'm missing a critical piece of the puzzle. If I'm not listening to the assistant coaches, if I'm not listening to the staff, all those people present great opportunity for me to get a more complete picture. So that's where I think it is really important. And I think with that, you better be careful when you're putting your staff together that you're not hiring a bunch of people that look like you and think like you. And that's where diversity is so important. In our country, when you say diversity, right away everybody thinks black and white. And diversity is so much more than that. It's ethnic diversity, it's age diversity, it's experience diversity, it's geographic diversity, so that you're able to get different perspectives and different thought. Again, that's another area where I think Michael Hazel's really good. He thinks differently than everybody in my building. So having that perspective is really important.
That's fantastic. And I agree. Michael Hazel's about as good of a teammate, and I say that in air quotes because he's much more than a teammate than anyone could ask for. Now let's talk about the relationship side and how and why that's so important to you. And specifically, describe a little bit about the intentional layout of your locker room and how you created that to foster this sense of relationships.
Yeah, so for me, it probably sounds overly simplistic, but people say, well, what's your philosophy as a coach? What's your philosophy? And for me, it's everything starts and ends with relationships. Mm-hmm. If you have healthy, positive, constructive relationships in your building with your staff and with your players, then you're going to create an environment where people want to come to work, people want to come to practice, and people feel valued. And I think that's what everybody wants in a working environment. It also creates an opportunity where if you're one of my players or one of the staff, and you know how much I care about you, and you know how much I care about the team and the organization, it allows me to be very challenging and demanding of you as a player or you as a staff, because people know it's coming from the right place. Yeah, he's being hard on me. Yeah, he's being demanding, but I know how much coach loves me. And I know how much coach loves, you know, Penn State. So it allows you to be really demanding and maybe get the most out of people and maybe help a player reach their potential by forcing themselves outside of their comfort zone. So that relationship is to create a really good, healthy team environment, work environment. But it's also to say, listen, you know, every decision we make is about what's in your best interest and what's in the team's best interest. And probably not in that order, what's in the team's best interest and what's in your best interest. But we're not asking you to do anything that doesn't fall under those two categories. And I think with that, you know, you got a chance to create something special, because at the end of the day, if people know you care about them and care about the organization, then you can do some pretty special things.
Absolutely. So talk specifically about the locker room and the intentional design.
So, you know, for us, everybody throws out, and it gets to be a little tiresome, to be honest with you. Everybody, oh, we're a family. But if you ask a staff member about another staff member about their kids or about their upbringing, they don't know. Yeah. They don't know. Or you ask the defensive tackle to tell you about the long snapper. And we got 125 guys on our football team. So it's even more challenging than maybe on a basketball team or teams with smaller rosters. You better work at it. You better be intentional about how you're working at building relationships. And there's a lot of different things you can do. So for us, most locker rooms are set up where the D-line all sits in one area, the quarterbacks all sit in one area, the wide, so they get to know each other really well. They spend so much time together. But once again, they don't know the guy on the other side of the ball or at a different position. So for us, our entire locker room is broken up. And we've always done this since I've been a head coach. The entire locker room is broken up, not by position. So it'll be a D lineman next to a kicker, next to a wide receiver, next to a, you know, a cornerback, next, whatever. And it rotates every year.
Oh,
so
nice.
Sit next to two people in a locker room, and you'd be amazed. You sit in a locker room next to two guys all year. You get to know those guys very well. You know, when you're tired, after the workout, before the workout, when you're excited, before the game, whatever it is, we break it up that way. But not only do we break it up by position, we also break the entire locker room up racially. Black, white. As much as we can. Obviously, the numbers aren't exactly even, but as much as we possibly can, because we want to make sure, again, that we are a family, that we are getting to know each other, that there's no divisions, there's no seniors versus the freshmen, there's no defensive linemen not knowing the specialists, the kickers and the punters and the snappers, and there's no obviously racial breakups on the team as well. So I just think it's being very intentional about what you're doing and how you're doing it.
Oh, for sure. And I know that it's working because one of the things that everyone's told me about you is how much once folks graduate and move on from Penn State, their strong allegiance and loyalty to you and to the program, and that the alumni are always coming back and so supportive, and that you really, they understand that the relationship you planted the seed with them while they were a player for you continues to grow even stronger once they've left. And whether they play in the NFL or they go on to do something else and start to raise their families, they still have that very tight-knit family feel. So I think that's absolutely remarkable. I know you and I share a very similar philosophy on how important it is to be in the present moment. So I want to ask you, does that make it really challenging as a football coach to be completely focused on the present, but then you still have to be recruiting, 1, 2, and 3 years out to keep this team going? Talk to me a little bit about that, because that's something I don't have a tremendous amount of experience with, and I've always been curious how you can stay focused in the present like you do so well, but yet you still got your eyes on the guys that will be coming 2 or 3 years later.
Yeah, and that's hard, and it's also hard because you want to make sure the way the recruiting calendar has changed over the last couple of years, the NCAA's made that more difficult, because the other thing is, ultimately, the most important thing that you have to do is when you recruit these guys, you have to make sure once they come on campus that they feel like a priority and they feel like the focus. But if you're not careful, you bring these guys on campus and you never want them to feel, okay, well, now they're focused on the next group of guys that they're bringing in. And it's hard because the amount of time you have to spend on recruiting, the amount of time that you're going to be gone away from the facility recruiting or out of town, that can make that challenging. It really can. So I think for us, at the end of the day, it's about transparency. During the recruiting process, we don't tell kids what they want to hear. We don't make any promises, in terms of, oh, you're going to start as a freshman or you're going to do this or that. We don't do it. Our program should reflect life, and they'll get what they earn. Nothing more, nothing less. Oh, could guys say, well, am I going to redshirt or I don't know. If you're ready to play, you'll play. If you're not ready, you won't. So I just think that goes back to the trust, that goes back to the relationship, because what you tell them in the recruiting process, if they show up and it's something different, then you're going to lose some of that trust. It's going to be difficult to build that relationship. But it is challenging. It really is. And I think, for us, it goes back to what you're saying is be where your feet are. And when we're in meetings, be in meetings. It's like when we go to a bowl game. We go to a bowl game, you know, it's they're excited, they're in a different town, they want to kind of go see, and it's okay, great, you should enjoy it. But when we're in meetings, be in meetings. When we're at practice, be at practice. Now, when you're going out at night with the guys, go enjoy yourself. Go have fun. You should have that as a college student. You should have a great social environment and experience as well. But again, you got to be able to compartmentalize all this stuff. And I also tell them, and I don't want to talk out of both sides of my mouth, but I also tell them, you can't be an academic All-American, an All-American on the football field, and an All-American partier. You know, again, that goes back to that sacrifice. I mean,
yes.
You got to be willing to give up something.
Love it. Last question. Another thing that I just have so much admiration and respect for you. And, you know, when you mentioned family, is your actual nuclear family. And, you know, you're such a present husband and father. I would imagine that's challenging, given the role that you play as the CEO of one of the best football programs in the country. How do you deal with that? And then has there been a silver lining with you kind of being on house arrest and grounded at home during this quarantine period? What's that look like for you?
Yeah, so I'm going to give you both ends of the spectrum. So the Please. First thing I'm going to say is, yeah, it's been phenomenal. I've gotten more time with my family over the last month than I can't tell you in the last 10 years, 9 years of being a head coach. I can't tell you. Now, the first 2 weeks, awesome. My daughters, every morning they wake up, I'm there, hugs, checking on them, blah, blah, blah. Every night they go to bed, I'm tucking them in bed, we're snuggling. That never happens. They wake up in the morning, I'm usually already at work. When our kids go to bed early, when they go to bed, I haven't gotten home yet usually. So first 2 weeks, awesome. Week three, they're like, okay, we've had enough of you. Isn't it time to go back to work? It sounded good for 2 weeks. And then after that, it's changed. But that has been great. The family time, you know, has been really good. For me to sit here and tell you that I have balance in my life, I do not. So one of the things that I always tell coaches, assistant coaches, is not only do you work really hard to one day become a coordinator or one day to become a head coach, if that's what you want to do, but there's also an aspect that you work really hard so that you have options of choosing places and coaches that you want to work with. Because once again, everybody says it's a family environment. But I've worked at places where families were not welcome in the facility. Yeah. So being able to work at a good place and hopefully work for, I hope people would consider me a good guy to work for, because my wife and kids and my staff's wife and kids, they come to the facility all the time and are always welcome and are always comfortable there. And I go out of my way to make sure everybody feels comfortable. And my daughters come to practice all the time. My daughters come, you know, to meetings. They're down in the nutrition bar making smoothies for the players. They're in the training room hugging them as they're getting treatment and asking them if they're okay. You know, so I think working hard as an assistant hopefully will allow you an opportunity to work for someone that creates a family environment that gives you a chance to have balance. Like, without my daughters coming to the office multiple times a week, it's going to be really difficult for me to be the type of dad I want to be because I just don't get enough time with them. So, you know, working for somebody and working at a place that's going to, you know, create that type of environment, that type of culture, I think is critical.
Well, I know you walk that walk because the experience when I brought my father and my son, so three generations of Steins, came to the whiteout game last year. I mean, that was one of the best moments of my life. And I can't thank you and the rest of your staff and everyone at Penn State football for the hospitality. And thank you so much for your time today, Coach. This was amazing. Any kind of parting words or any last bits of wisdom you want to share before we salute and say goodbye?
Alan, you've been great. I appreciate the opportunity to get on with you, and you know, you've been great to our organization. Like I said, we got your quote up in our building. We just have so much respect for you, how you go about your business. When you came and spoke to our team, it was impactful. So I wish you nothing but the best, and hopefully you and your family stay safe and healthy, and hopefully we'll be seeing you soon.
Likewise. Thanks, Coach.
Bye-bye.
Well, that's it for us. I hope you enjoyed this conversation. For more killer free content, make sure you check out allensteinjr.com/free. Join me at Allen Stein Jr. on all major social platforms and subscribe to my full timeout, 30-second timeout, and overtime monthly emails. I look forward to helping you raise your game.